Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The World Cup party for the US is over. A 3-1 defeat against the Netherlands sends Greg Berhalter's side home. Netherlands through to the next round of the World Cup. Hello and welcome in to ESPN FC live here on ESPN Plus. What a show we have for you today. Plenty of reaction from the first day of the knockout stages of the World Cup. Frank Leboeuf and Stevie Nicol with us here in the studio. We'll kick things off, obviously, with that 3-1 victory for the Dutch. It was a great opportunity for the US to start well. Christian Pulisic had a big, big chance that was saved. And from then on, really, the Dutch took control. We saw Depay scoring after 11 minutes. And then just before the break, Daley Blind would make it 2-1. Given 2-0, sorry, given the Dutch the initiative. The US would get one back, but then Dumfries would score pretty much soon after they made it 2-1, 3-1. That was it. A game over. For a lot more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, from Qatar, Seb and Herker with us, as is Nadim. Casey joins us as well. Mario, to give us a Dutch perspective, who's going to be a little bit patient, Mario, because we're going to have to start with the US and where it went wrong for Greg Berhalter first. Let's start in Qatar, shall we, for everyone and their ways. Boys, how are you feeling now, what, 12 hours after the game?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first 10 minutes of the game went great, Herc, and then clearly the Dutch quality kind of shone through.
Yeah, a lot of quality, a lot of individual quality, collective. The coaching came through as well. First 10 minutes, you almost started asking yourself, why is there so much U.S. possession? Like, what is going on here? And then you realized sans the Christian Pulisic chance, it was probably the most clear chance besides that goal, that they had it under control. And I mean they as the Dutch. The Dutch knew exactly what they were doing. They were sitting back. They were being calculated. They were being intelligent. They were letting the U.S. have possession of the ball, trying to create a numerical advantage on the wings. And once that ball possession was lost, their shape was just out of whack. They weren't in a disciplined shape, and it was right back down the heart of that spine. It was 1, 2, 3 touches and the opposite end, and just schoolboy errors. The second goal comes off a throw-in, literally a throw-in a few minutes before halftime. You could literally see the collective soul of the U.S. men's national team leave their body, and then it was just cruise control for the Dutch national team.
Yeah, you kind of got the sense, you know, watching this game, as we hear Casey there in the background, you kind of got the sense, right, that the U.S. like had fallen in love with their physicality. When we were talking about this game in the lead up to it, we thought so much about this American midfield, and yet almost that physicality worked against them. Like the technique that the Dutch had, especially in the first goal, yeah. You see the quality there. And the U.S. guys, for as good as they played, they never got on the ball, and when they did, they just really couldn't beat all that dangerous.
Yeah, I think the possession statistic will make you think that the USA were controlling the game, but ultimately it was the Netherlands that were doing so.
Yeah.
They were allowing...
It's almost 60-40 to US.
Literally, yeah. So you would think that's like a nice positive performance, but it wasn't the case. I think there was a lot of time when Zimmerman had it and Tim Ream had it, and they weren't really doing anything with it. And when you are in that position, you sort of get lulled into this false sense of security that you are, everything's under control. And I think at times you've seen Serginho Dest, you've seen Robinson go too far forward. And lo and behold, for the Netherlands, when there was a turnover, they're coming straight at you. I think that was the case for the first goal. And then the second goal, as Herc said, like, it's such a sloppy, sloppy way to concede directly from a throw-in. But this is your chance to sort of organize and to put things into a good spot. Yet still now you concede in the last minute of the first half. You could have gone at 1-0 at halftime and thought, this is what we're going to do in the second half. But now the mountain's just that little bit higher. The task is just that little bit tougher. And in fairness to Van Gaal, when you're bringing on, was it Bergwijn?
It was.
And he's dropping people back. He's going more attacking,
yeah,
at 2-0 up in a knockout round of a World Cup. It's impressive. And just to mention one thing, actually. So I was speaking with Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
Oh, a name drop.
This is one of many name drops I could put in there. And he said the biggest thing that he was disappointed with from the US was the fact that he felt the manager treated it like it was a group game. He said at the end of the day, you could have gone through on penalties So why be so open in a game
that's the most frustrating thing is you saw how calculated they were, how intelligent they were against England.
Yep.
In my eyes, a much more difficult opponent, and they respected the English national team. They said, you know what, we need to be very careful, very disciplined in the way we attack to not leave
Don't
ourselves
Americans
open. Don't
Americans like their teams aggressive? They were too aggressive?
They were too naive.
Saying?
It was very naive of them to think that they could go and attack them that way and commit those type of numbers and that the Netherlands team wouldn't be able to hurt him in transition.
Yeah, we got to acknowledge that the better players are on the Dutch side too, right? Greg Berhalter said as much afterwards. But the U.S. had more shots on goal, and yet the quality of the chances, the clinical nature of these Dutch players. And I'm not just talking about the finishes.
More shots on. Do you see the type of saves Turner had to make? I don't ever
recall.
Nopper
didn't have to make a big save on Pulisic?
It was the only one, Seb. You keep mentioning Christian Pulisic's chance. It was the only one in the ninth minute, and then they had nothing else besides the goal, which is a very fortunate goal if you're looking at it. I still don't know how that ball went in.
Yeah.
I guess my point is not just the finishing. It's every cross from the Dutch was dangerous. Every ball into the final third was dangerous. And Christian Pulisic's one of the guys, but he's the guy we focus on a lot. When he got into those dangerous spots, the final pass wasn't there. And there really were not any Americans that completed the final pass.
Yeah, so I think for people who would have been watching the game from home, it probably sounded quiet in the stadium. And I think that was symptomatic of the way that the USA were playing. So they had the possession, but they weren't really doing anything with it. Every time there was something which could get the crowd going, they really got into it. And you could sense how many thousands of USA fans were there. But for large parts, they were quiet. The ball's moving side to side. They were a little bit sloppy in possession. And then the only time you'd kind of hear them was with this feeling of dread as all of a sudden Depay's got the ball in the 10. He's turning, he's running straight at the back line. So I think, you know, it's a tough, tough game for them. But ultimately, this is the lesson. There are some teams who have better players, have the better experience. And overall, I think the Netherlands look comfortable, even though they didn't. Yeah. They weren't the ones that they were sort of the protagonists within the game.
That experience is with players and managers as well. Louis van Gaal after the game saying, you know, this team didn't adjust. He was very blunt. He was very direct, kind of putting it on Greg Berhalter at the end of the day.
Naive, Casey, is that a word you would use to describe the performance today?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of that. I mean, I would agree with what Jimmy Floyd said is the United States played a particular way in the group phase. And we talked about how resolute they defended, how Matt Turner really didn't have really difficult saves to make. Yes, there's that one moment, that Harry Kane free header in stoppage time. But for the most part, it was a team that picked and chose their opportunities to get forward. They scored when they needed to score, but they made sure they kept it tight defensively. And then for some reason in this match, they just went for it. From the very first minute, they just started throwing numbers forward. And yes, I think it caught the Dutch off a little bit. And they created that good chance from Pulisic early. But after that, you know, it was a case where this is not a Dutch side that's going to pick you apart for 90 minutes of a game. But go back to their first goal. U.S. has numbers forward, and it was a 7-8 pass, one-touch combination, 1-2-touch. That once you break a press like that, you know you've got 6-7 guys behind the ball, and the quality and the efficiency of the Dutch attack, you know, hurt the U.S. And go back to key moments, the goal in the last kick of the first half on a simple mistake, a silly giveaway, and the slowest player in the World Cup sneaks in front of you and smashes a ball home for a 2-0 lead before halftime. And at that stage, it's almost insurmountable. But give the guys credit. They kept fighting in the second half. They got themselves back into the game. And right when you're starting to put this Dutch side under pressure at 2-1, you fall asleep at the far post, and all that pressure goes to naught. So, yeah, naive is a really, really key word, and one that, you know, Seb, we were talking about on Football America. So you asked me, was I satisfied with the tournament or was I disappointed with the way it ended? And I told you both. I'm happy with what I saw. I'm happy with a lot of young players who stepped up. I'm happy for someone like a Tim Ream who really wasn't even in the squad and had a tremendous tournament. But then I'm also disappointed because you're not going to have a better opportunity to beat a side like the Netherlands in the round of 16 than we had today.
What went wrong?
I think what happened is I think Mr. Van Gaal knew exactly what would have happened. in that game. And he knew that the United States will open up and will go for it with the only enthusiasm and maybe the lack of experience in that level. And it's what they did. Unfortunately for the United States, they had the chance to score. And I think it would have been the turning point if Pulisic would have scored that goal. Because for me, and maybe Mario would tell us, I'm not sure the Netherlands have a plan B. The plan A, and maybe the only plan, is to wait and counterattack, which they do very, very well. And it happened straight after the miss of Pulisic, where when they scored the goal, when Depay scored the goal, we see Adams not coming back, making a mistake, not sprinting back to try to cover and take the ball from Depay. And he came like that, little mistake by little mistakes. At the end of the day, you lose the game. Three crosses, the guy that talked about it, three goals, and somehow lack of chances. But again, I go back to what I think. I think it's not only that they were naive, it's that they are somehow inexperienced still. Right. So within 4 years in the United States, being the host, maybe it would be different, but I think they have to improve in some details. Football is only about details. The Dutch, they resolved most of the details, where the United States didn't.
It's not only inexperienced players, it's an inexperienced coach. Hmm. Where did he get it wrong?
I'm not so sure he got it that badly wrong, to be honest. You know, we can talk about how the dynamic of the game might have changed had Pulisic scored.
Right.
It would have meant that the US could have pretty much done what they're probably best at, and that is sitting, closing the ball, being tight the way they had been in a group, and then trying to break. Unfortunately, he didn't. And as soon as the Dutch scored, then after that, the Dutch were like, come on then. And I don't think Greg Berhalter can do anything about players who give the ball away. I don't think he picked a wrong team. But the players keep giving the ball away. And if you keep giving the ball away, then what's happening is the man who's giving it away, there's going to be players out of position because they're moving to get the ball. And then when you're playing against a side who are thriving on it, with somebody like Depay and the form that Gakpo's in, then you're up against it. And from there, it was... For me, it was done at 1-0.
Again, really, Stevie?
Yeah. The way the US were playing, the way they were giving the ball away, it was a matter of time for me when the second goal was coming because of that.
Why didn't they go into this game with the same approach as they did against England then? When it worked so well against England and they stifled them so well.
Because they knew that England will attack, will lead the game, and they knew that it was their will, which is not what the Netherlands were wanted. And at the end of the day, it went perfect for the Netherlands. Again, had Pulisic would have scored the goal, it would have been completely different.
Right.
Because the United States would have dropped back, they would have waited for the Dutch. Van Gaal would have needed another plan, and then it would have been a different game. Oh, so doesn't mean that Pulisic is the only guilty for that defeat. But it's a real turning point.
I want to bring Mario into the conversation. Mario, we'll talk about the Dutch, obviously, a little later on. Inevitably, I suppose it might lead this way anyway. But what did you make from the US over the 90 minutes?
I felt like I listened to all you guys. I think the US wasn't ready for what Holland was bringing to them. I think the energy that they played with the couple of games that they went by, they performed really well. They had a high energy. They played against England. And I think maybe in the English game, they maybe burst out too much energy compared to what was coming. Going back to also the other side is, I won't talk too much about Holland, but also I felt like America was surprised. They got the ball playing against a team that normally is dictating the game, and Holland didn't want that. Because they wanted to see how good is America when we give them the ball and let them dictate it. And let's see how good they're going to play now. And I don't think the U.S. has ever had the experience doing that. And that's why the game turned around, because now they were using, because they knew, Van Gaal knew, if I'm going to play energy to energy, those are young players compared to what I have. I have young players too, but I still have a mixture. So, for example, Blind. Why did it took so long? They took way off. I don't think they should have taken him off, because he is clearly the one that you want to test. But they never tested him. He never looked at the weak points for the Holland side. And I think that's what was the crucial thing. And that's why Holland really looked at all the weak points. If I'm going to call out some weak points of you guys, it was incredible to watch the game. I was just watching the game and I was like, how do you not know? Because even when I was playing under Van Gaal, he would put us down as a team and highlight all the weak points of every team you play against, and he'll tell you, this is what he's going to do, this is what's going to happen, and if you don't do it, you're going to lose the game. If you do it, we will win the game. That doesn't mean that he would have won the game because it was that easy, no. But I still think they should have done better in the sense of, like, understanding where's Holland weak and where are we weak so we don't get exposed.
How do you dictate the game when you don't have players that can do that, though? You know, we've been talking the whole tournament about how great Adams and McKennie and Musa have been doing about this energy and closing the ball and winning the ball back. That's a different ball game than having the ball at your feet and having to outplay teams.
Then I suppose why not start players like Aaronson, like Gio Reyna, who can play with the ball?
So is that,
why not bring in the personnel
so you really
that can
think,
do that?
You really think Aaronson? Do you really think any changes? Listen, the one player that they have that we would all say is a football player would be Reyna.
Mm-hmm.
But we have no idea what's been going on there. That's a complete mystery. But after him, are you really telling me that Aaronson could have started this game and would have been involved in dictating play? He's not. He's a runner as well. So sometimes you've got to understand, you don't have the players to dictate a game. You have to hope that you can play the way that suits you. But if the opposition go ahead and then give you the ball, what are you supposed to do when you don't have the players to do it?
Herc, what do you think?
Well, I think Stevie's initially right in his thought, but there are different ways of dictating the game or making your mark on the game. If your motor is that midfield, then that midfield should be able to neutralize a Frankie De Jong, who didn't have a clear partner throughout this World Cup. I mean, it's Deron in this game, but he had a partner every single game. So Van Gaal was still trying to get that right. What you don't want to do, and Mario highlighted, is Van Gaal's going to take your weaknesses. He clearly saw that Walker Zimmerman and perhaps Anthony Robinson weren't quite ready to have the ball at their feet and eliminated the situations where it was Sergiño Dest or maybe a Yunus Musa or a Christian Pulisic on the ball and forced those to play make and forced them to come out of the back and forced those guys to commit numbers for going forward. So it would be only Tyler Adams hung out to dry when it was a counterattack. I think that's a way of dictating the game. You don't have to be a world beater on the ball to have a clear path of dictation in this game. And that's where I thought the U.S. men's national got in trouble. I agree 100% with Mario. They've been hearing all week the Dutch national team about, well, this isn't the Dutch national team of old. You know, no Bergkamp, no Van Basten. You don't have a Cruyff. You don't have a Van der Sar, not even in goal. I think Van Gaal said, okay, let's see how good you are. Show us how good you can be. And he just sat back. And I think in Greg Berhalter's mind, he saw what Ecuador was able to do in the group phase and said, we can use this as a blueprint. We can go at them with speed. We can be that team to dictate going forward and get chances. And that clearly was not the case.
If I may here, we have thrown a lot of praise at the MMA midfield, right? McKennie, Musa, Adams.
Yeah.
You were in the stadium. We don't always see on television what they're doing. What did you see from that trio there?
I just didn't see them working cohesively when they had the ball. I think there was a lot of times when the two centre-backs would have it and they'd be looking for an option and maybe they'd give it to Adams, but then it's not going to be in combination with Musa. It's not in combination with McKennie.
Do you feel like they wanted the ball?
I think at times it didn't really look like it, and I don't know why that was, essentially. I think some of them, perhaps in the moment, were hiding. Maybe the situation was difficult because they were looking around and they were having different looks to what they're used to. And so for some, they weren't really getting on the ball, getting on the half turn, trying to be dynamic, because I thought for this game, and I kind of saw it from looking down, if they could move the ball quickly and inject tempo into it and be able to create some of those overloads, then great. But ultimately, it felt like at times they played the game at the Netherlands tempo instead of their own. And as a consequence, like, you're playing into their hands. And at that point, people overcommit. I think Sergiño Dest overall in the first half attacked well.
Mm-hmm.
But then he sort of let some of those defensive duties go out the window, as we saw for that second goal. And I think there were other players who happened to be in that same situation. Because lo and behold, whenever there was a break, you're seeing Depay and Gakpo versus Zimmerman and Tim Ream. And who do you think is going to win that matchup more often than not? So I didn't love it. I expected a bit more character from them, but they are still young players at the end of the day.
If I can just end real quickly with what Stevie said about what player can help you out, what one player is going to make that difference. That's the thing. When you don't have that one player, the system is imperative.
Mm.
The coaching system, the coach, what he does, it's imperative because you need that system to beat players that are world beaters.
Worth noting here, too, everyone's talking about energy. And you talked about all the changes that Dutch have made in their midfield. So in theory, we think those guys should be fresh. The U.S. hasn't really made those changes.
No.
And we talk about the gap in quality is just not the gap in quality and the technique of your starters. It's the depth of the roster. And we see that with this U.S. team.
Yeah.
This U.S. team is not as deep. And in the fourth game, that midfield engine, I think, I don't want to speak for anybody else on this panel, seemed to have not run out of gas, be very low in the gas tank, guys.
Let's take a talk about the tournament and overall, Casey. It was almost a bit like U.S. elimination bingo, wasn't it, at the end? The pride, fight, showed American spirit, which you kind of have heard before, but there was supposed to be progress in this tournament. Did you see enough of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you think of going from not qualifying to getting out of the group stage. You know, that's obviously progress with the second youngest team in the tournament. And so it wasn't like you had a bunch of guys with a lot of experience who slipped up in qualifying and put it right. It was a whole new group of guys in a new experience. And you think of the goals that Greg Berhalter had when he took the job. One, qualify. Two, get out of the group stage. And he did both of those. Now, this idea that the U.S. is somehow going to flip a switch and become Brazil is kind of ridiculous. So I like what I saw at times, very much so. I mean, to the guy's point about the midfield three, you were more or less playing with three number sixes. And because you're playing with three number sixes, you really shielded that back four really well in the group stage. The idea was that Musa was going to be the one that would maybe be more advanced, get possession of the ball, run at defenses, maybe be more of the playmaker. But that never really materialized throughout this whole tournament. But what you did do is you kept it at zero at the back. Yes, it was a rash challenge from Zimmermann. Was the only penalty in the group page, which is what broke them down. So they did what they needed to do. They stayed in games. They fought hard. They got through. And then they threw that out the window. And that was a little bit frustrating. But overall, absolute success. A bright future. Young players that, fingers crossed, can only get better. And then add in some new, younger players. And I really like where this United States national team is going.
You're going to have to find a number nine at some stage, I reckon, before the next World Cup, Seb. Looking at it, are you as positive as Casey, Seb?
Yeah, and I would put it this way. I think the United States didn't just get good results in this tournament. They gave good performances. Let's put today aside for a second. I know it's the game we're all focused on, but for 45 minutes, they were the better team against Wales. There's a tactical change. They don't adjust well in that second half. Other than that, five of the six halves in the group phase, they're the better team. And I include the two halves against England. Nobody saw that coming. So, you can look at a team like Poland that's in the round of 16 and say, this team has played for nothing. I mean, they have results that'll get them into the round of 16. But on performance, how could you feel good about Poland? You look at this U.S. team, you say they performed well. Even in stretches today, they looked semi-dangerous, I'll say. Maybe they were lacking that final touch. And Dan, to your point, like, yes, it would be great to find a number nine. It's like a great quarterback in the NFL. They don't grow on trees. You don't just pop up with a number nine. And even the teams that are in this stage of the tournament don't all have great number nine. So, of course, if this U.S. team adds that, another level in 2026. And I think that's the backdrop, is that this is a young team that's heading into its prime for a home World
Cup.
And
you cannot forget how young they are. They're the second youngest team in this World Cup. They're the youngest team in what is this round
Who's
of
left,
16,
right.
What was left. And that inexperience is going to come back to bite you in the end. But what you saw, the growth, the potential is there. All these kids are going to be 25, 26, and 27 come next World
Cup. And do you think at that next World Cup they'll be able to sort of handle that pressure and the expectation from the home nation or not?
Yeah, you've got your nation behind you. You've got an experience under. You've got a World Cup experience under your belt. You've been there. You've seen it. Maybe there's more input on the coaches' side. Even Greg Berhalter is going to come out better for this. This was a growing experience for Greg Berhalter himself. First 45 against Poland, very good. Second 45, extremely disappointed. So how can you come in thinking you can put a complete performance against England for a total 90? And he did. It's a growing experience for him as well.
If you, what's your hunch right now? Will he be in charge in 4 years' time?
I don't think so. And I think Casey's mentioned it before. It's not something that it's because we don't want to or even the Federation doesn't want to. I think Greg Berhalter may be wearing thin on that one as well. Maybe he wants to try his hand at club level.
Yeah, and an important note here for whoever's going to be the coach and if this team's going to grow and be able to handle that pressure, you got to get quality games in. And with no qualifying coming, that's going to be a problem. So that's a big thing for the Federation to figure out. How are we going to get competitive matches to test not just the players, but the manager, whoever that is, moving forward, guys?
When we play 98 before the World Cup, we were absolutely horrendous in every game we played before the World Cup. So I don't know if Seb is right, but it's not a very good example. But just want to say about the United States, I think after the non-qualification, the Federation and I think the MLS tried to improve the way of thinking and the gap that they have to fill comparing to other nations. United States is a big country. You have more than 30 million kids playing for soccer, where in France, for example, you have only 2 million. I guess it's something like that in England. You have all the players that you need to find the right team within like maybe 4 years, maybe 8 years, maybe 12 years. But if you don't go for the right thoughts and the right direction, you're going to be wrong everywhere.
It's definitely trending in the right direction, Stevie.
Absolutely, 100%. What you have now is a core. Listen, every club team, every successful club team has a core, and then you add to it. And it's hard to get an international football, but that's exactly what they've got. Through this qualification, through this World Cup, they've now got a goalkeeper that could be there for the next 10 years. You've got the three players in the middle of the park that we've been talking about. You've got Pulisic. You know, can you add two or three other players around that?
But to Casey's point, these players, this group, this core, is not going to make the US a top 10 team. You're not going to be selling Brazil overnight.
But that's where do you find your number nine from? Can we get somebody like Pulisic on the other side? You know, can you get your, you know, Dest, again, somebody like Dest can be around for another 7-8 years. Can he take the next step? Robinson's going to be around as well. Can he take a next step as well? So, I mean, we've just spoken about 7 or 8 players who could be your core. Can you find a couple of superstars that will make a huge difference?
That's a big ask. That's the problem, isn't it?
But that's how everybody starts. Every team has to have the core, and then you add your stars. You've got to find your stars.
But your stars right now, the players you were naming, they're good, but if you compare with the top level in the world rank, they're still far away. So they have to improve. Of course, they are in a good way, in a good path, but they're still far away. You know, if you compare Robinson with the top of the top in the as a fullback, you will find like maybe 10 players. He can, you know, get there, but he will have to work hard.
Of course, a number of US fans in Qatar for the World Cup. Alexis caught up with some of them after the game.
It was a heartbreaking game. I think that defensively we made a couple of mistakes, especially on the left side.
I think the starting lineup was horrible.
Horrible. He started a player that didn't play the whole cup, and he puts him in this very important game.
I think the U.S. had a lot more possession than I expected and had a lot of chances. I think they were just not clinical in front of goal. I think the experience showed, but we're proud of our boys.
To be honest, I think I've been a little bit disappointed with Gio not getting as much playing time. I think he's one of our top talents.
Everything from this point on was icing on the cake this tournament. Youngest squad in the tournament.
Greg Berhalter, do you still want Steve in charge?
Yeah, I like him. I think he's a pretty cool guy. He seems like he's bringing the team together. They're young.
If we had to blame one person, the coach.
Poor. So even earlier, we should have crushed those earlier opponents.
As always, the coach very much the talking point. Just a reminder what Craig Berhalter has achieved compared to your previous rosters. Of course, making it through to the round of 16. They're looking to make it to the quarterfinals for the first time since 2002, Casey. Greg Berhalter's future. I'm surprised to hear Herc saying that he won't be in charge. He doesn't think he'll be in charge for 2026. Are you on the same page?
Well, what we were talking about on Football Americas was I know Greg well. We've been friends a long, long time. And Greg's the type of guy that really wants to be on the pitch every day. And, you know, you can't do that with a national team. You have such large stretches where, you know, you're not in contact with your players. So there's a part of me that thinks that potentially Greg would want to go back to coaching a club. I have no inside information on this. Greg and I haven't talked about it, but knowing Greg the way I know Greg, I could see him looking at Jesse Marsh and going, Yeah, I might like a little bit of that. And I know he had his opportunity in Sweden. It didn't quite work out. And I'm sure he'd love to go back to Europe and see if he can to make it happen. But in the end, there's only so much you can do. And somebody has to be phoning you and saying, hey, we want you to coach our team. So I'm sure Greg will look at whatever options come his way. And I personally know some of the fans are a little bit frustrated, but again, I'll reiterate, you had two goals. You achieved both those goals. I don't know what more a coach can do.
Does what Casey say make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you know, there's nothing more fulfilling than stepping on the field every day and being involved with the players. I mean, obviously winning is big time, but it's just what you are. You know, Greg's been a football player all his life. Now he's a coach. When it's what you do, I can't imagine going through 3 or 4 months when you just go and watch games for the sake of it. I would hate to have that job. I really would. So,
isn't that your job now?
No, but there's no.
I get to
talk about it.
Right.
Okay. I get to talk about it 2 hours after the game's finished.
Right.
What does he do? Go home and tell the wife.
Well,
that's what he does.
When you love what you do, and you're
the downsides, I've got to talk to you.
Yeah, smarty pants.
I think when you're a coach, you want to have the feeling that you handle everything, and being a national team coach, you have the guys coming and going, and you have to deal with some players, with the injury, with the clubs and everything. You have only 3 days to prepare most of the time. That you handle nothing.
Right. You're not doing anything. You can't work on it. All right, maybe a set piece or two. But right. what else are you going to do?
Yep. They should play for free. They should work for free.
Oh, you think so?
Oh, they do nothing. It's what's
that's it. We'll say thank you. So what happens, Seb Herc? Do you come home now? What happens?
No, we don't want you anymore.
Do we come home? What's going on here?
No, I have to actually see Natum off in a few days, which will be very difficult for me on a very emotional level. What? And then I welcome Shaka Hislop to the apartment here
in
Doha. Oh. So no, we're going to be doing Football Americas every day through the end of the World
Cup. Did you catch what Frank said about 98? Wow. All the U.S. need is Zinedine Zidane, Thierry Henry, and Trezeguet, and they're good to go for
perfect
a World
comparison,
Cup.
Yes. Frank. Perfect comparison. Yep.
And LeBouf. All right, thank you very much, guys. Thank you very much to Casey as well. Mario, I promise we will talk about the Dutch a little later on in the show. Just a reminder, Football America's the boy mentioned, available every single day on ESPN+. If you ever miss a show, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Well, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid as we focus On the other knockout stage, which we now know will see Argentina take on the Netherlands. Argentina with a 2-1 victory. They were absolutely cruising in this game. Great goal from Lionel Messi to break the deadlock. Then a goalkeeping howler would see Alvarez make it 2-0. Lautaro Martinez then had a million chances that he couldn't convert. And then Australia would make Argentina sweat late on. It would be an own goal, a deflected effort, would give Australia hope, and then a big save. Remember, at the end of the game, we'd see Argentina through to the quarterfinals, and we can see these celebrations. This is the Argentina watch party in Buenos Aires. Look at the number of people there.
Wow.
That's when Messi scored, which was, I don't know if you know this, Frank, his first goal in the knockout stages of the World Cup.
I was told like 100 times since he scored, you know. I'm very pleased to hear that.
This was a weird game, Steve.
Well, it was a weird game because Argentina didn't put the game away when they had the chance. And we all thought when that mistake, unfortunately, from Ryan and it's 2-0, then we all think the game's done and dusted, which it should have been. But then, as in football, you just never know.
Yeah.
And it's a crazy goal, an incredible deflection. And all of a sudden, we're, 15 minutes to go? Australia just need one goal. Mm-hmm. And they almost got it. I mean, my mate Martinez.
Yeah.
What a challenge he made on the
Lissandra Martinez. Yes. Short, the one who's too short to be a defender.
Correct.
Right.
Well, yeah. It was a challenge on the ground, obviously. and then, of course, his brother Martinez in goal.
How many Martinez? Three Martinez.
He made a save as well with the last kick of the ball that could have taken it to injury time. I mean, here's the challenge. A great challenge.
Now the thing is.
But it should have been done.
That was a scenario that we saw. It's no surprises until the 77th
minute. Yeah.
That everything was written like, Argentina were better, they're going to score goals, they're not going to show crazy football, a very enthusiastic football, but they're going to do the job until the 77th minute, where we know football, that nothing is done until the final whistle.
Yeah.
And a crazy goal in a way that it's a non-goal, the shot was going away, and then you have like two last chances.
Yes.
And fortunately, you have a great goalkeeper, Martinez, and Argentina go through. But imagine at one of the players, Aussie player would have scored, and the 2-2, you go through extra time.
Yeah.
My God. That's another story, but it is what it is. Yep. They go through. Well done.
Mario with us, as is Nadim. Jules joins us as well. Jules, this is why we play the game.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was great to see Leo Messi in that kind of form as well. Scaloni said after the game, this is the best performance I've had from Messi since I took charge of the national team. And I think it's one of the best, I think, performance overall that Messi had in his career for Argentina. His 1,000th goal, in his career. To score his 789th goal is pretty incredible. If you add the assist, it's even more. And to be fair, it's fantastic to see him like that. The thing about Argentina, they didn't play well. I think right now, all you care about is winning, though. When you get to this kind of stage of the World Cup, yeah, of course, it's better if you can play well and you take your chances and etc. But they didn't even create that many chances, I thought, overall, in the end. Their XG is 1.6. But they did the job, and that's all they care about right now. And they were still celebrating in the dressing room, on the pitch, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. FIFA had to tell them to get out. Otherwise, they would still be in the stadium right now celebrating. That team spirit, I think, can also take them far.
Mario, it's interesting, that team spirit, because obviously you look at it and think, oh, they're celebrating, that's great, the collective is there. But you're also thinking, you know, it's Australia, you should have won this game, and you should have won it more convincingly.
No, I think when it comes to the World Cup, I think all nations come to a moment where it becomes difficult, right? Because even if you're a so-called, with all the respect, weaker side, you're still going to perform in a way that you're going to set yourself up defensively. That's what Australia did. They set up, they set back, they waited, because Argentina was in the first couple of minutes, they were in control, they were leading, you know, they were passing the ball around and everything. But then there came a moment when they dropped back, and it was really interesting to see that when they dropped back, and Moy from Australia was picking the ball up in pockets, but he wasn't clinical enough. He wasn't moving forward. He wasn't passing the ball really forward. He was just going left, right, left, right. And that wasn't. And then Messi, if you can see one moment, it was really interesting to watch. He goes and the whole team followed. And it was just like, you know, it's like, how will I say? You know, when you have a leader on the pitch, People always say, like, you like what I always say in football, you cannot make a leader. You are one, and okay, of course, everybody will talk about Messi because he's one of the greatest footballers ever lived. But besides that, you also have to understand that everybody has to understand the trigger when he goes. And when the trigger went, everybody went to press. And I feel like it was really Messi's game, not only because of that. Guys, if you come out of missing a penalty, it can hit you. But this guy, oh my God, his mindset is so cold. And even when he was in the game, you could see open things up. And then he gets his moment. And when he scored the goal, everything was finished because he just leads. And look how many assists he also gave in the game for others to score and still control the game.
Nadim, you look at the goal and defensively, you think, oh, how can you give someone like Messi that much space?
Yeah, you could say that. I think there's a bit of good fortune from the touch from Otamendi, I believe it was. But then once he gets to his feet, it's such a good finish. Initially, I think myself and Julian were thinking maybe it took a deflection, but then you look at it and it's just so neatly just placed into the corner. And I think that, you know, that's quintessentially Messi. 789 goals. The stuff which we normalise these days is truly staggering, even 1,000 games in itself. But yeah, he's a very, very special player. And to mention as well, they were celebrating at the end of the game. It's not just because they beat Australia. Like, they suffered for the last 15 minutes of that match. And, you know, when Martinez makes the tackle, should he not celebrate, for example, because it's Australia? Well, no, because it still prevents the other team from scoring a goal. You know, they took the game on for what it was. And as Julian was saying, it was about the win. And they fought hard to get that win. There were players who were out in the field. De Paul was out on his feet. You were seeing Messi out on his feet, maybe because he was pressing a bit more than we've ever seen before. But fair play to them. They managed to get it across the line. And now they're set up for what could be a great game against the Netherlands. But again, it'll be a tough encounter because there's another team in there with a little bit of a streetwise sort of nature to them. But fair play to Argentina. Congratulations to them. And yeah, for Australia as well, they've made, I think they've had an incredible World Cup for what they sort of would have expected of themselves. And I think their fans are very happy overall.
Do you know, a couple of things. People always ask me, why does nobody tackle Messi in the box? Because it always seems to be bodies.
Yeah.
Defenders are scared. Defenders are scared to go near him because he's so quick, he's so clever. They're scared to touch him and bring him down. And so he, not only does he generate space for himself with his ability, but because players are so scared to go near him as well. That's why he can do that with all these bodies around him. The second thing, and probably the most important thing, every single player in that squad is playing for Messi.
Right.
You can see it as clear as day. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they don't care about themselves.
Is that
they
a
don't
problem?
Care about their family. They don't care about... It's Messi. Well,
is that problematic at all?
It can be problematic if it's on your mind 24/7, you're not preparing properly, you know, it's all... But if you channel that energy and that desire to get this guy the World Cup, if you channel it all the right way, my goodness, that's an unstoppable force. Can you imagine that?
It's a problem if Messi is not in a good day,
right?
Because you're going to play for him. I think to go back to how you can cope with Messi, it's impossible. On top of it, if you have Otamendi who misses his control to become an assist, where everybody's surprised, even himself, it's hard for the defense to cope with that.
Right.
You know? Again, yeah, the Messi dependence is compulsory in a way that because you have such a talented player, you have to use him. That would be stupid to not doing so. But at the same time, as I said, if Messi is not on a good day, you're going to suffer.
What's interesting then, the pressure is obviously on the team to deliver for Messi.
Yeah.
The pressure is on the team to deliver for the country. Mm. You then have someone like Lisandro Martinez, who has not had a good tournament so far, obviously. Had those two goals chalked off against Saudi Arabia. Completely different tournament if he scores those. Today he had those clear chances. It's kind of added pressure, isn't it, to the striker. How mentally do you kind of deal with that? Because, you know, I'd be a mess. You know, you wouldn't want to hear from it. Because you don't want to be Gonzalo Higuain. You don't want to be
Olivier Giroud last World Cup. You don't want to be Stéphane Guivarch in 98, where he was a striker, didn't score. The thing is, even on the eyes of Messi, when he gave him the pass and he missed the goal and he looked at the grass because he was thinking that the grass was the problem, you felt that he was sorry for him. And then when it's not your World Cup, it's not going to be your World Cup. And it's so sad, but it is what it is. And some players are lucky. Remember Schillaci in 90. We never heard about him before. We barely heard about him after. But he was on fire during the World Cup in 1990. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's football.
If Mario, it fascinates me that the psyche of getting over that, when your team's just won, everyone's happy, but surely in the back of your mind you're thinking, oh, man, I really need to get a goal soon.
Yeah, no, of course. I saw that. You know, like you can think about it, but one thing you're always going to have is that you got to keep going. And that's, I think, the great ones. That's why I compliment Messi, because we all compliment him, because he missed that penalty, guys. You know, look, his reaction to the penalty miss, you could clearly see that he was affected by it in the way if he was thinking, but he knew he had to carry on. He carries on. Look how he celebrated his goal afterwards. You know what I'm saying? When you see him today, he lets go. I always say this. Look, we have nations around the world that we represent, like in myself, for example. But the Latins, the passion of Latins, you cannot buy that. It doesn't matter where you're from. They have a passion that is on a different scale. You will not understand it if you don't. I've never witnessed it myself because it never came to me, but I've seen players around me that are from that nation. Their passion is like, when they do something, or when they lose, or when they look how Uruguay reacted, for example, when they got kicked out. It's a total different prospect.
Dan, remember that? The winning is the deodorant of the game. Do you remember that?
I do remember, Stevie. This is one of your
kind of. Well, it's kind of the same thing for Lisandro Martinez, because it doesn't matter.
Lautaro Martinez.
Beg your pardon.
Yeah.
They've won the game.
So the only person is a striker. He's not
of course
your...
he's like that. Next time I do that, I'm going to do that. Next time I do that, I'm going to. Do you think he's never? I know it's different. It's a World Cup,
right?
But he's not playing for Argentina in this World Cup,
right?
Because mentally, he's like a little kid,
right?
And as I said, the fact that they won the game, yes, he wants to score, but they won the game, and so nobody's going to remember it,
right?
He's getting
so he moves on to the next one.
He becomes stubborn in the way that the only objective is to score a goal. The first chance that he had just after coming on, he had a chance to give the ball back to one of his teammates in order for the other to score, and he tried to score across something stupid where he didn't see where the net was. So that's absolutely what you see from a striker who's completely obsessed by the fact that he has to score, otherwise he's going to be criticised. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You get worried when they start hiding.
Yes.
That's the issue, yeah.
Passion.
as Nader mentioned, of course, Australia exceeding expectations, making it through this far. And at 2-0, there wasn't too much hope. But when that deflected effort went in, Melbourne exploded as the guy at the front just looks in complete and utter disbelief at it all. In the end, though, they go home with their heads held high. And Alexis caught up with some Australia fans who were at the game.
How are you feeling after that?
Feeling pretty good. We gave it a good crack, and pretty proud of the boys out there for giving it their all.
They've done us proud, and I just hope that it inspires the kids back home to get on the park and play, and this is what you can achieve. Your dreams can come true.
And I got a lot of love for Matty Ryan, but what a moment.
What is?
Can we talk about that? Should we talk about that?
Too soon.
Yeah, we had them on the ropes. There was a couple of pretty good chances. I couldn't believe that it didn't go in.
If you look at the replay at the end, that last shot, hit the arm of the goalkeeper, that would be very tough on them, I think.
I think we deserve a couple of frothies after that one.
Yeah, 100%. A few beers to go down tonight, definitely.
Fantastic.
With Stevie.
Brilliant. Alexis joins us now. Alexis, what's interesting, and it might be completely wrong, but it feels like every time Argentina play, the atmosphere in the stadiums go up another notch.
Yeah, Dan, you are 100% right. And I mean, today was definitely the best atmosphere I've been to so far at a match at this World Cup. And that's probably because it was pretty much 98% Argentina fans here and just a pocket of Aussie fans. And they were trying their absolute best. But you know, Argentina fans, they're loud, they're rowdy. They have more songs than even the England fans as well. They jump on the seats. I mean, that stadium might as well have just been La Bombonera back in Buenos Aires because it was absolutely rocking. It was so loud as well. They were constantly chanting and screaming to Messi to do something, really and truly, because after that first half, people really weren't impressed. I actually got to see a lot of the fans being frustrated. One of them even turned to me and was like, we're not playing like Argentina, but at least Messi will always be Messi. And they knew that it was going to take a stroke of brilliance from the man himself that they called Dios with a 10 there. One had another flag that said, Argentina is my religion and Messi is my God. It was unreal when he finally scored. The place went to absolute bits. I mean, people had families there. There were some kids in front of us and their parents just tripled over them. It was amazing to see. They were crying. They took the shirts off. The security had to come back to them and tell them, hey, please put back on your shirts. And then towards the end, they didn't care. They took the shirts off again and were waving it. But it was truly an amazing atmosphere. And as I said, this Argentina team, they're expecting them to win the trophy. They're not looking as convincing as they need to be, still relying heavily on Leo Messi. But I think that their 12th man definitely has a massive part to play in their chances in taking that trophy.
Alexis, as always, thank you very much.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Let's take a look then at how the bracket looks. We know then it will be the Netherlands against Argentina on Friday. What a cracking tie this should be. Just a reminder, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Let's take a look at how the bookies have this game set. You imagine Argentina a favourite. 4-7 on. The Dutch 11-8. Nathan and Jules are still with us, as is Mario. Mario, we can talk about the Dutch finally. What, 50 minutes into the show? We can finally talk about the Dutch and how you feel about them going into this tie.
Oh, going into this tie. Look, man, it's all about Messi. I see, like, you know, this nation focused so much on Messi. That it's incredible. Like, you know, like, even if you don't want to, you have to, regardless of that. But we also like his style of playing.
Even Mario doesn't want to talk about Haaland. He's on Argentina and Messi.
No, I'm talking about Messi, because now I'm going to tell you what Haaland is thinking now. Because Haaland talks about him. Why? Because they highlighted it in the sense of, how are they going to stop a guy like that? Because if you're going to play a player against him, then you're playing with one man less, because something can happen. I did it myself when I started as a young boy. And then I had to, you know, like, it worked out well. But that was 10 years ago. Or, I mean, what's it, 15 years ago. So now going forward, I feel like Holland has got to focus on totally different things, because the way they played against the United States, and we don't want to go. Okay, there are a couple of things that I wanted to highlight about that, is that he knew exactly what he was doing. Dest, your best player on the ball. He is clearly, you try to get him on the ball. Where was Memphis Depay playing? He was playing in the left-hand zone so that Dest would not get on the ball. So you were switching it to Robinson. Why do you want Robinson on the ball? Because he uses a lot of energy to go forward, and he gets exposed. That's what they were waiting for, the counterattack. Then the other side you had, the two at the, in the middle of the park was the Zimmerman, and I cannot pick up the name so quickly. But going back to that, it's like you guys were waiting too long to see what you were going to do. And Holland allowed you to do that. And Van Gaal said it after the game. He said, we were just waiting for them so we could hit them on the break, because they had to give us the answer to what we were waiting for. And we had a lot of opportunities to get the ball, but we didn't maximize the opportunity so well. So that was the only downfall to the game. But away from that, we want to play better. We want to play better. We hear that repeatedly from people complaining how the Holland is playing, because Holland does not play like the classic way how we normally play. But it doesn't matter. We don't play the classic way. But Van Gaal clearly goes for the results. And at this point, that is very new for Holland, but definitely new for America when they face them.
Dan, you're saying, Mario, that Van Gaal thought about everything. Had Pulisic would have scored the goal, do you think he had a plan B? Do you think it would be the Dutch would have been able to attack and lead the game?
Yeah, they had to. That's a very good question, because I thought about the same thing. You are right, because the game would have been different if he would have scored, because Holland had to come out now. And the problem would have been is that what they were going to do, the only thing was going, look, Holland really clearly is depending on Depay. That's why he gave him the golden ticket that he would not give another player. He said, we're going to wait till you get fit. Okay, De Jong had a little bit, but he knew De Jong he was going to get. So Depay he gave it to. So if he scored, they had to spread up the game a little bit more and be more forward in the sense of the way they were today. Because first half they were like that. But the second half, you know, you saw us, yourself, Frank. It was a different game the second half than compared to the first half. What he did, he wanted them to run down the energy because he knew that America could not bring the same energy of the first half to the second half. And when that happened, now he started playing. And that was the answer to what would have happened if they would have scored the goal. Then America would be in the upper hand. But we also don't know what they would have been doing, because Berhalter played so long. He was in Holland for so long. Tactically, I'm going to be honest, we are a small nation. What do we have? We have technique we can work really hard on, and tactic we can work on. The rest of the things, we normally get overrun, because the passion of what America has is on a different scale. So we have to be smarter.
Looking ahead to Friday, Jules, it's big boy time.
Yeah, it's big boy time. I mean, I think this is a fascinating encounter on paper to start with, tactically, between Scaloni, who's still a young manager compared to Van Gaal. You know, this is again, we had that a bit with Berhalter today. It won't be the same scale, but not too far. And I also think that the Dutch would be very, it's a very pragmatic team, this team. Very different to what we've seen before, maybe in previous generations. This is very like the 2014 one that Van Gaal already took to the semi-final. This is a team that is very happy to let you the ball. You can have the ball because Klaassen plays so well out of possession, and then when they recover the ball, he's so good to find those little space between the lines. And then Memphis is so good, and Gapco is so quick, that plus the two wing-backs. And we saw, I mean, if Johan Cruyff was watching from up there, the two of the three goals are from one wing back to the other wing back, and then the right wing back to the left wing back. This is exactly what Van Gaal dreams of at night, every single night. And right now, I have to be honest, I'm not sure how much of answers this Argentina side has against this Dutch team. That's why, for me, it's a very 50-50 game. And yeah, it might be decided by a Messi moment of magic. But there was something just quickly. Emi Martinez said after the game today, Messi is 99.9% of our team. This is him. The rest, the 0.1%, is the rest of the players. Okay, this is great. No one has never won the World Cup on his own. Not even Maradona in 86. So let's see how they do against a Dutch team. Nedim said it. Van Dijk looking really, really sharp, looking really, really good. And so is Ake, and so is Timber. The wing backs are very good. And this is a team that tactically and collectively knows exactly what they're doing. And I think it's going to be really tough for Argentina.
Nedim, do you agree with Jules? 50-50?
Yeah, I think I do. I think I do. And in some ways, I think people will be writing off the Netherlands because Messi just had that game there and they're going to have the crowd there. And it'll be interesting to see Netherlands as an underdog, because for the way that they play, it's going to be one of those matches where maybe they'll just sit back in and try and hit them on the break again. Maybe Argentina are going to overcommit. Except the difference this time is when you look at someone like Gakpo or Depay, or maybe a Bergwijn if he comes on, those guys running against the Argentinian centre-backs is probably going to be favourable more to the Netherlands than, say, we saw from the Australians today. So I think it's going to be a very, very interesting tie. And the Netherlands have all of a sudden hit this spot now where I didn't really like them that much through the group, But they kind of showed me something today, which made me think I wouldn't be surprised if they made it to the final. And that's a really weird spot to be in because it was literally 2 days earlier. I was like, no, there's nothing. I was drinking the USA Kool-Aid, literally. I was like, it's all done. It's all said and done. USA is going, it's crossing the Atlantic. Yeah, literally, Seth's corrupted my brain. Literally, my brain is fried. But in the end, they just look so, so comfortable. And I guess that's going to be a big thing for them when they go and play against Argentina because they won't fear them. And one thing I saw today from being in the stadium, they're exceptionally well organized. And I think for Argentina, it's going to be tough to break them down.
Just to wrap this up, I'm not sure if you see. I'm not sure if you've seen this, Mario. The reception that the team got when they arrived back in the hotel, which is great, which is lovely. The best bit about it, by a million miles, is Van Gaal dancing like an uncle at a wedding with his camera showing everyone as well. There he goes. Hey! I love it.
Oh boy! He let go.
Yeah.
He let go.
So good. No, I think that's fair enough.
The atmosphere is going to be crazy.
It's going to be awesome.
The Dutch fans. And the Argentinian fans, that's going to be a game to watch. Really.
Mario, just quickly, because we heard Marco van Basten very critical of the Dutch today and their style. Is that collective amongst the nation, or are they, like you, appreciative of what Van Gaal is doing, just getting them through?
No, look, I always said that. The way Holland is playing now is not like the tradition, how I've been brought up as a player too. Everybody knows that. The whole nation knows that. Everybody knows it. But the key thing is now, Van Gaal, he's saying it, but let me tell you the truth. He's now going, his focus is more on, let me get the results, because we have always been playing nicely. But let's just get the business done, and then we will figure it out later on.
78 World Cup final.
Now there's some sort of phrase with deodorant, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of deodorant, I'll need a lot on Sunday because it's Senegal against England. England, big favourites, 4-1 on to go through to the quarterfinal. Senegal coming in at 3-1. Let's take a look at the predictions. Frank, you have gone for Senegal. That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant, considering your history.
You too. You too.
Yeah, of course. But
you
back Canada out, Denmark out, USA out. So
I got Argentina good.
Well, one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I got some other. I got French good.
Right. Let's go out. Jules, why
Brazil?
Why Senegal?
I mean, to be honest, because my friends plays for them and they watch the show, and I'd be in trouble if I don't root for them. So I'm rooting for Senegal. Because I'm a good friend. I think this is not going to be an easy game for England to start with. Of course, they're favourite on paper. They have to be. They've got a better squad. And we said it the other day, Idrissa Gueye not being there for Senegal is a huge loss. I think with him, you would be even more confident. Without him, and Mendy can replace him, and he's a good little player, but he's not Idrissa Gueye. So this is a huge blow for Senegal to start with. But in terms of physicality, in terms of the rhythm that they can put in the game, in terms of how they will isolate, I think Ismaïla Sarr against one of the two fullbacks, whether it's Walker or whoever, or Trippier on the right, or maybe he will swap and Sarr will play on the left-hand side against the left-hand side of England against Luke Shaw, for example. But I think this would be the game plan, and they would be very hard to break down. But you have to say that if England don't beat Senegal, it would be a huge disappointment and a huge failure for them, even if I'm rooting, of course, for the Senegalese.
For your friends. Nadim, Nadim, you have some friends in the England side, obviously, as well. Let's take a look at if you're including any of them in the starting 11. Everyone been clamouring for Phil Foden to start. You believe it won't be Foden, it will be Rashford that will be coming in for Sterling.
Yes, that's what I believe. As somebody who's joint top scorer in the tournament, I could see him doing that. And I think Saka down that right hand side, he does a very, very good job. But ultimately, I think England have so much depth that anything's really possible up there. And whoever they put out, I think they're going to be really effective. And whoever they can bring off the bench will have a point to prove. And anyway, just to mention what Julian's doing. So obviously he says he has his friends in the team. I think his friends listen to the show as well. So if you ever hear him going really big on Senegal, or maybe really big on Chelsea,
I
don't need to say anymore. I don't need to say anymore.
I'll tell you what,
I'm honest.
Foden is not going to play again?
Sterling, he'll play Sterling. He always plays Sterling.
No, but I don't understand. I think there is a mystery. Like there is a Reina mystery.
Who would your front three be?
Oh, that would be Foden, Kane, and Saka.
Right.
Yeah, Foden, he has to play. He would be the first in the list for me.
But Rashford scored three goals already in this tournament.
Who?
Rashford.
Yeah, good, good. But if I have to pick three,
right,
that would be Foden for me.
Yeah, same as you.
Yeah, I'm the same front three as Frank.
Mario, who would you prefer to defend against? A Phil Foden, a Marcus Rashford, a Raheem Sterling?
I will pick my up front will be what you guys already had. I will pick Rashford, Kane, and Saka. Those will be my.
Why no Foden?
Look, Foden, I think the question's been going up for a long time, you understand, to see if he's going to start or not. I like him as a player, don't get me wrong, but I just feel like, hey, Rashford, I go for the goal tally. Kane, I feel like he's going to, you know, if he doesn't score, he at least set people up. And Saka, yeah, it's not going to be that easy. So that's why I think I would go for balance, but definitely Foden, I will give him more time than they've been giving him because I think they've been waiting too long and I think they have to allow him to get his rhythm into this team. Because if you just gave him one game, come on, guys, you got to give him a bit more. And that's why they haven't done that. That's why we'll give Saka that opportunity. You
know, go on, quickly, Steve, we've got to move on.
If you're a defender, you much rather play against Rashford and Phil Foden.
Because you know what's happening.
You know exactly what you get. You have no idea with Foden.
Meanwhile, of course, the earlier game, the winner of which will play England or Senegal, it's France against Poland. No surprises, the defending champions.
Wow, 1-7.
At 7-1 on. Means you've got to put on $7 to win one. Poland 9-2. Let's take a look at the predictions that everybody has. Everybody going France.
That's why I wanted 7.
Frank.
Yeah, well, I have to. You know, according to what we saw lately.
You have the same prediction as me, Frank.
Yeah, but you love France, you know.
Yeah.
And,
I've got many friends who play on the team.
Yeah, that's why.
Lots of them.
That's why. No, I think it's a fair prediction according to what we saw. But I think Poland is going to park the bus.
Right.
And if France doesn't score very quickly, it can be tricky.
Right.
That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree, Jules?
Yeah, I think so. I think we know that it's going to be the same team as the one that faced Denmark and that beat Denmark, which is completely logical from a Deschamps point of view. But you're right, it's a team that, and this is the team, so Griezmann is not in that position. It would be more as an 8 if we were 4-3-3 formation, but this is a team that can easily beat Poland. However, Chesney can have the game of his life. Lewandowski can score a goal after with a half chance, for example, so they will have to be careful. And also, the last time they had to play a knockout game, it was against Switzerland, and we all thought that they were going to do it. They were 3-1 up with 10 minutes to go, and they ended up losing it. And I wonder psychologically if that maybe will play a little bit on the mind of the ones who were there in that game against Switzerland 18 months ago or not. So we will have to see. But from what we saw against Denmark, for example, especially, I think it's still very encouraging that team is going from strength to strength.
Thank you very much. Will you be watching the game with Mark Ogden, Jules?
Yes. Well, we share the flat as well, so we spend all our time together.
Make sure it doesn't jinx you.
Thank you very much, then, to Jules and Nader. Much appreciated.
You know who's going to jinx me?
Who?
You know who's going to jinx me? Herc and Sebi are going, and I really don't want them to go. There's something about them that I don't like at all for that game tomorrow. I'm not happy with that.
You didn't even have to say about that game tomorrow. I just don't like at all in general. That's fair enough. Thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. Mario, back. For extra time. Of course, a lot more from Jules available on the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast. Be sure to check it out.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Meanwhile, Neymar tweeted this, of course, Brazil in action against South Korea on Monday. I feel good. I knew that I would now.
That's a song, isn't it?
It is indeed a song, which I won't sing because we'll probably have to pay royalties on it. Yeah, that's just shut up. Good news there for Brazil. Also good news as well, more significantly, a lot of rumours over the last 24 hours about the health of Pelé. He took to Instagram and wrote, "My friends, I want to keep everyone calm and positive. I'm strong with a lot of hope and I follow my treatment as usual. I want to thank the entire medical and nursing team for all the care I have received. I have a lot of faith in God, and every message of love I receive from you all over the world keeps me full of energy and watch Brazil in the World Cup. Thank you so much for everything." It goes without saying. Of course, we hope that Pelé pulls through, one of the best players ever to grace the game. And some good news coming out of Brazil then about his health. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Mario back, Frank and Stevie as well to answer your tweets. FC Extra Time is brought to you by Globant. Hello and welcome into the studios. Mario, you've had a long day with us, mate. Was it 1 a.m. in Amsterdam now?
Yeah, it's 1 a.m. I'm a lucky man.
Yeah, lucky's an interesting word.
It's funny that he has a halo.
Yeah. He does have a halo, doesn't he? Yeah. It
looks like an angel. You look like an angel.
Yeah, exactly. Hey. Frank is here. Frank, can you just see if the questions are on the printer, please?
Do
something for your daughter.
There we go. We've got to make the most of you while you're still here.
There's nothing there.
Okay, I'll just read them off the screen. There we go. Time to screen. Right.
One thing.
Yes.
You know, we're naming goats, you know, saying that the greatest of all time.
Yes.
Can it be plural or it should be only the greatest? It's only one greatest.
Wow, that's quite a can of worms.
I hear that Ronaldo is the greatest, Messi is the greatest. Right. For me, the only one goat. It's Pelé.
Okay, there you go. So greatest by definition is only a singular, isn't it? There we are. Voilà. Frank, how surprised were you that a European team let the US have possession? Does this show progress for that? How the US is viewed?
Well, as we explained...
His face.
Yes. We explained during the show that in fact it was planned by Van Gaal.
Yes,
that was a tactic, as Mario explained to us, and that was clearly thought through, and they went into the trap.
Yeah,
you know, that's what it is, it's not because they couldn't do that; it's because they wanted the US to have the possession and counterattack.
I've got to ask you, Mario, because Marco van Basten was pulling no punches at half-time despite the fact the Dutch were 2-0 up. Has he got history with Van Gaal? Do they not like each other?
No. I watched van Basten. He was my coach for the national team, you understand? So I know exactly how he thinks about the game. But the thing was, no, it's fine with him. But the only thing he says, I want to see beautiful football. That's what the whole country wants. But Van Gaal is, like I said, he's just going for result. Because we have tried tournaments over and over and we never won it with all the beautiful stuff. So maybe Van Gaal now goes another round. Do I like it to watch it? No, I want beautiful football. But hey, guys, business sometimes has to be done.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. Have you ever seen a 35-year-old playing with the ball like Messi does in your life? The best ever?
No.
No?
The goat.
No.
Another one.
No, even I actually, what stuck in my mind later on in this game was a ball that went down the left-hand side, and he actually had a foot race with the defender, and he was all the way with the defender. Defender didn't beat him. So to be able to have, I guess to be able to he's got incredibly quick feet, and when you get older, the timing and the strength and everything starts going and you kind of lose that.
Right.
He doesn't seem as though he's lost that at all. So to be 35 and still have such quick feet is pretty amazing.
That's the key, the pace that you bring into your football and you can keep all over the edges. Yeah. It's very important. We see Luis Suarez out of it.
Yeah.
Ronaldo is becoming difficult. Messi is the only one who are able to keep that pace and change it and make the game being so effective.
You're going to upset Ronaldo fans. They get angry Ronaldo when you say those sort of things.
But to be fair, Ronaldo's 3 or 4 years older than him.
Yeah, he's 3 or 4 years older than him. And we're going to see how Messi cops if he still plays at the same level at 38. Yeah. That would be kind of different. And it's hard. I'm fed up, comparing Ronaldo and Messi because they're completely different type of players.
Right.
And they don't play the same position. They don't have the same physique. They don't have the same football. I don't know why we compare, except that they are two fantastic players.
Well, you've just answered your own question.
We shouldn't compare.
Yeah.
We shouldn't.
That's what we do, Frank.
Yeah, but because you're not clever. You're not clever people.
Well, a lot of people watching this have this debate, and it's just a natural debate to have.
Yeah, and they're right, because it's funny at the end of the day.
Well, stick to your guns. Mario, how do you stop Messi?
How you stop Messi? I think there is no way to stop Messi. The only thing is that you have to pray before the game kicks off and pray after the game that it worked out well. Because this guy thinks 2 or 3 or maybe 100 steps ahead of everybody. That's why he looks that quick. When you guys talk about the pace, that's the answer to his pace. His mindset is way ahead of anybody else. We normally get it when we get older. He already had it when he was 20 years or 18 years old. And look where he is right now. He sees things that we don't see.
More pro Messi, anti Ronaldo propaganda.
No.
It's horrible. Horrible to see, and I apologize.
That's horrible for you to put us in that position.
I apologize to our Portuguese.
You should apologize to Ronaldo. People were going to be very bad to us.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move
on. Don't start.
We love Ronaldo.
Ronaldo will always be my guy.
For Mario, do you feel confident in the performance versus the US, or do you feel like it was too close?
I felt it was too close. I think we could have done more when we had the ball. And I think, when we scored the first goal, everybody was like, wow, wow, wow. I would have liked to see more of that. Because then, why I say that? Because then technically, it will be a better answer for everybody to understand what was happening. Now, sometimes people were thinking like, we were sitting back and sometimes questioning the situation. I understood what Fogal was doing, but not everybody understood that. And I think that he should have cleared up a little bit in the sense of like, take more control. When you win the ball back, they got to really go for the goal. And I think sometimes they lost the ball too quickly.
It was a very good question.
What, it's a good question? Because it's Frank Leboeuf, the first bald man in France. Where does that come from, if people don't know? Why do people call you the first bald man in France?
Because that's the reality of it.
You were the first ever bald person.
Well, to shave, my head completely. Right. For the bald people, we have many, but, yes. But to shave my head.
No one ever did that before.
No, not in France.
Is that not an arrogant way to look at it? Just because you
It's just a fact.
Oh, it's a fact, is it?
That's a fact.
Yeah, it's the French Guinness World Record.
We don't need to comment it. It's just a fact.
Right, I see. And then people are like, wow, look at that man.
No, because I was in England.
There are I met Frank like this. He's right. I met Frank like this. He was like that already. So I don't know Frank any different.
96.
This is Frank Gab, I know him.
There's some holes in the story, Frank.
Jean-Luc Cavalli shaved my head.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He was so bald seeing me, fighting with it. He said, come over.
Wow, there we go. And you've been bald ever since?
Yeah.
What a lovely story.
Shiny.
Okay, next question coming up then. I don't think this is from Frank Leboeuf. Frank, is it worrying that Argentina have to fight for wins against presumably easy teams? What will happen if they face a team like France?
The thing is, people have to stop thinking that because it's Argentina and because they have a big history, that it's going to be easy for them. Because they're going to play the Socceroos that, of course, have a lesser big history in the world of football. We compare every time by the history of...
I think you look at the players on the pitch, don't you? That's why.
You too, but...
So you look at that and you think, why isn't this team dominating?
In Australia, you have, for the Socceroos, you have many players who play in England.
Just because you play in England doesn't make you great, does it?
Well, it makes you being more experienced than if you play in Australia. Or if you play in England for French players, you're going to be better than if you play in League One. But that's what it is. I think Argentina never had any easy game, during for many years. And they have to fight all the time because of the Messi dependence as well. So it's not easy. And we have evidence of many teams struggling against so-called lesser teams.
Okay. Final question then for this edition of Extra. I'm going to let Mario go to bed after this.
Yeah.
Will Tyler Adams, having such a great World Cup, does he deserve a big transfer move to a high-profile team? Take that, Leeds fans. Or do you think his game goes under the radar due to lack of goals and assists? What do you think, Mario?
I mean, it's a tricky one because I feel like Tyler Adams was also put in a midfield playing against a guy like De Jong. And I didn't feel like he had the quickest answer to how to adapt to that. Do I feel like he had a great tournament? Yeah, of course. I think they did well. I think the whole US did well anyway, because we can talk about it like Holland outsmarted them or whatever. But guys, from where they were and where they are right now, yes, they've done great. And I think he should definitely, you understand, keep this track going. And I think he will find something that is definitely bigger than where he is right now. But at the moment, get your games going in England. Right. That's the most important.
I think he put his name
he's
in.
He's just had a big move.
Yeah.
No, but he had a big move. But
he was on the bench at Leipzig.
No, but he's not in the Premier League. He's maybe not in the US, certainly. But in many countries in the world, he put his name in the list.
Yeah, but to do what, Frank?
And I'm saying that he had a very good World Cup.
No, most definitely. But it's not a World Cup that was going to suddenly put him on the radar, is it?
Oh, yes.
But he's had a very good season.
Of course.
He's had
of course. A very
three
good
games.
Season.
If you've got a decent scouting system, then you should definitely know about this guy already.
Yeah, maybe.
Three games against Iran, England and Wales. Is the mate you go, well, I've got to spend £100 million on him.
He's had a good season for Leeds.
Yeah,
he's had a good season for Leeds.
You have many players.
He's not a complete... Coming from absolutely nowhere,
yeah, yeah.
When you think about the numbers that watch the Premier League. But he's had his big move. That is his big move.
Right, to Leeds.
From the bench at Leipzig to Leeds.
He puts you on the pedestal if you have a very good World Cup. And he had three good games. Today was a little bit harder. But people are going to know you. They're going to have pressure from the media. They're going to maybe think about you. And that's possible that
I don't know, Frank.
Well, he plays for a big club already.
Exactly. That's
so
what
I'm saying. Nobby could maybe interest many other clubs. That's possible.
Because of three games at the
because
World
of three games, you know.
That used to happen.
I talked about Schillaci in 1990. He signed for Juventus after, I think.
Yeah, he did.
He think for a big club.
But that only happened, Frank, because back then nobody knew anything
Where are you
about
going, Stevie.
I'm just relaxing. I'm just chilling out.
Put your feet on the table. So let's talk about Taylor Adams, you know.
So normally, years ago.
Yeah, what happened?
Years ago.
Relax, Dan.
Nobody knew anything about players from other countries.
No.
Particularly, I think in 1990 with England against Cameroon. And we were like, oh my goodness, this Cameroon side's unbelievable.
Right, yeah.
It's only because we'd never seen them before.
Right. Yeah, I don't like your
but
shoes.
Now we've seen everybody.
I don't like your shoes.
Why not? Well, I think they're all right. Yeah.
That is it. Thank you very much. Mario, you got to go to bed. Thank you so much, mate. Much appreciated.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, Mario.
See you, guys.
The tense working atmosphere here is something we need to relax.
Oh, that's under pressure.
Just a reminder, ESPN FC, it's Frank's last day in the studio.
Yeah!
Everybody's
going to be happy.
What a moment for us all. Be sure to join us.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.